2244. Jason Walker, IRN USA Radio News.
Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day, coming to you on the Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live. This is show number 12, and you're listening to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day. Should be a pretty good show tonight, if everything goes according to plan. Pretty cool here in the Sonora Desert. We've been pretty windy here for 2 days. It's kind of cool outside tonight, as a matter of fact. We're going to be joined after the bottom of the hour break with our regular co-host, John DiNardo, who lives up in New Jersey. We're going to be trying to focus on how Planet X is connected to this undersea oil volcano that's going off in the Gulf of Mexico right now. Have some quick news to report as far as earthquakes go. We just had one here off the east coast of Honshu, Japan, a 6.4. But in actuality, folks, that's a 7.4 because they're not telling us the true numbers. This just happened at it was at a depth of 24.23 miles. That's the newest one I see here on my earthquake site I'm looking at. There's a big one in the Nicobar Islands or Nicobar Islands in the India region. That was a 4.8, which in actuality is a 5.8. That just happened within the last hour. I see Bolivia, Indonesia, Southern California, Central Alaska. Santa Cruz Islands had a 5.4. That would have been actually a 6.4. That was over 4 hours ago. So that's pretty much what we got for earthquake news right now. I did want to report that on Thursday, June 3rd, there was a massive fireball seen up into Jupiter. Two amateur astronomers in the South Pacific captured on video the impact of a fireball on the surface of Jupiter. They caught it on camera. Stargazer Anthony Wesley down in Australia was watching the sky Thursday night when he spotted a huge collision and fireball on the surface of the giant planet, Space Weather reported. The collision produced a bright flash of light in Jupiter's atmosphere. Mr. Wesley posted the information to an online space forum. Christopher Goh in the Philippines confirmed Wesley's findings with a video he had shot of the planet. There's a quote here by an internet blogger named Bob King. better known as Astro Bob. He's quoted as saying, "It's rare enough to see a spectacular fireball here on Earth, but no other human being in history has seen one happen right before their eyes on another planet." Now, folks, this is not the first time that this amateur astronomer down in Australia, Mr. Wesley, has been ahead of the game in Jupiter watching. Last year, matter of fact, back on July 19th, he noticed a huge black spot on the planet's surface, as big as our Pacific Ocean, as a matter of fact. That's how big of a gash it left on there. Astronomers spent months analyzing the spot before concluding that an asteroid from the Hilda group of space bodies near Jupiter may have struck the planet while it was turned away from Earth. Jupiter is the largest planet in the solar system, more than 1,000 times bigger than Earth. The planet is a giant ball of gas and liquid with little or no solid surface. Last month, Wesley produced pictures showing that a stripe of dark red clouds in the planet's southern atmosphere had vanished. Well, that's interesting. I remember I seen that on the Coast to Coast website, that infamous dark southern equatorial band had all of a sudden disappeared. I didn't know Mr. Wesley was the one that put that out. Interesting. It's not yet known what caused this recent impact on Jupiter, but amateur and professional astronomers alike will be watching the planet for marks left on the planet's top clouds. Well, I want to interject by stating, me and Mr. John DiNardo, we believe we do know what this is. As Planet X pierces the southern plane of the ecliptic of our solar system, it's coming up between the main asteroid belt and Jupiter. Planet X has a horrendous entourage of comets which accompany it. So this may have been, we may have been witnessing one of the comets from Planet X smashing into Jupiter. Astronomers around the world, both professional and amateur, are scrambling now to get views of the impact site. Emily Lakdawala of the Planetary Society told AOL News. She also said, "Wesley's work shows that you don't need a big telescope to see pretty cool stuff. If you folks want to go to the top of my Flash News subpage, there's actually a link on the top so you can watch this video of Brian Williams on MSNBC reporting this. If you folks recall, I don't know if you know this or not, but Professor Jim McCanney on his weekly radio show announced this was back in early March or early April, there were four comets seen slamming into the sun. So that could be Planet X related too, I'm not really sure. Now, I want to read an article or email here that John DiNardo sent me. It's pretty good. Got a pretty cluttered computer desk here. It's rather cluttered. John DiNardo sent me this on Wednesday, and I'd like to read it to you because it's pretty interesting about this Gulf oil mega disaster that we're witnessing right now, which is really on a scale of biblical proportions. If this thing doesn't, they don't get this thing under control, which I don't think they plan on doing, this spill will be up the entire eastern coast by, I believe, August 1st. And in I think I read somewhere in about 15 or 18 months from now, this oil have gone around the entire world. Anyway, here's what I wanted to read from John. It's entitled "Evacuations, Gulf of Mexico Earthquake Islands Arising?" The Gulf of Mexico puzzle pieces are strewn all over the internet. We need to explore beyond the narrow limits of this media mind game known as the accidental oil spill that is destroying our environment. Why do we need to seek out deeper truths surrounding this two-dimensional cardboard cutout concocted environmental crisis? Because many millions of human beings all around the Gulf, from Mexico through the tip of Florida and the Caribbean islands, may soon be swallowed up in a colossal tsunami. Puzzle piece number one. A friend of John's named Mark, who is a Persian Gulf War veteran, maintains some contacts within certain agencies. About 3 years ago, Mark told John DiNardo that, quote, a friend who is a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey told him that they are surveying the seabed of the Gulf of Mexico because the government industrial complex, sees great opportunities for extracting oil from the Gulf since they have detected that the seabed is rising and they expect land masses to arise out of the Gulf. Mark told John this at least 3 years ago. Is it actually happening now? Puzzle piece number two. This morning, Steve Shapiro called John with an insight that just jolted him. Steve thinks he knows why they are planning mass evacuations of the Gulf Coast populations, because they anticipate an earthquake and a consequent tsunami. And this conjecture parallels Mark's report from the U.S. Geological Survey geologists that the Gulf seabed is expected to push up new land masses. Puzzle piece number three. This so-called oil spill is obviously more like an oil volcano erupting beneath the seabed. There are reports that the upward pressure is enormous, which explains why they would currently be drilling relief wells to reduce the danger at the infamous pressure point, pressure which is plausibly producing a bulge in the seabed. Indeed, seabeds are rising in places around the globe. The following internet report has been widely circulated by many credible sources, a fact which can easily be verified by search engine. A guy who monitors the NOAA National Data Buoy Center says the data shows that the seafloor is rising by as much as 13 feet a day in the Coral Sea. Since the great tsunami of 2004, a chain of buoys has been over 100 meters or 328 feet less distance from buoy to seafloor in 24 days. That's 13 feet per day since the earthquakes. Now, this is disturbing. If his analysis is accurate, it is disturbing indeed. But if you go to the NOAA website, you'll find these buoys have not been recording any data lately. Suspicious that. Are we being kept in the dark yet again? Quite likely. And the final puzzle piece, number four, remaining puzzle pieces are just too fatiguing for both you and me to labor over right now. Maybe we can continue this examination at a later time, and maybe you can contribute a clue and an insight of your own, such as the 4,000 mass evacuation vehicles blanketing the airstrips and flight lines at an Air Force base near Jacksonville, Florida, photographed on Google Maps possibly before the April 20th gusher broke out, John DiNardo. I want to play some sound bites here. First one is by radio talk show host Mark Levin back on April 30th. He talks about how SWAT teams were being dispatched down to the Gulf. So we're going to play some sound bites here. I got to go to the right one, though. Here we go, number three.
Something right now. We'll get to the immigration issue and these other issues. But something extraordinary happened today, and I really want to focus on it. Many years ago, during the Reagan administration, I served in a number of positions. Associate Director, Presidential Person, Chief of Staff to the Attorney General. But I also served for a period of time as Deputy Solicitor of the Interior Department, the number two lawyer there. Now, I want to comment on this clip from the President in the Rose Garden today based on that background, because this is a stunner. It really is. Listen to this. Cut seven, go.
And while BP is ultimately responsible for funding the cost of response and cleanup operations, my administration will continue to use every single available resource at our disposal, including potentially the Department of Defense, to address the incident. Earlier today, DHS Secretary Napolitano announced that this incident is of national significance, and the Department of Interior has announced that they will be sending SWAT teams to the Gulf to inspect all platforms and rigs.
SWAT teams from the Department of Interior? When I was Deputy Solicitor of the Interior Department, I don't remember any SWAT teams. Now, you heard him say the Department of Interior has announced that they will be sending SWAT teams to the Gulf to inspect all platforms and rigs. I didn't know that the Department of Interior had SWAT team. And by the way, on a side issue, I'm now guessing a lot of these environmental and land agencies probably now do have armed SWAT teams, which is really stunning to me. What are teams going to do when they're inspecting all platforms and rigs in the Gulf? Doesn't this sound like Hugo Chavez to you? We have an environmental problem. We have a leak. And we're sending SWAT teams to the platforms and the rigs? SWAT teams are not environmentalist experts. They're not scientists. They're not engineers. They're law enforcement. So why are we sending SWAT teams to all the platforms and rigs in the Gulf of Mexico? I'll tell you why I think. I think this is a precursor to another form of government nationalization. I think those SWAT teams are there in coordination with the Attorney General's office, the Interior Department, Homeland Security, maybe the EPA, to gather records, to seize records at these sites, and to lay the foundation for more government takeovers. Maybe not outright nationalization, but through the back doors this president is so good at doing. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't know why this leak happened. We don't know, obviously, the cause of it, but I am just stunned that the media in this country is so nonchalant, so disinterested in this president's use, or I should say abuse, of power.
Okay, folks, I want to go to a separate soundbite because the time is flying like usual. The next one is by Lindsey Williams. He's going to come on here and talk about these volatile organic compounds that are circulating in the atmosphere all along the Gulf states, including Florida, as we speak. So I'm going to bring that up.
Whenever this extreme pressure of 20,000 to 70,000 pounds per square inch hit that pipe, it probably burst it at numerous points between the floor where they had gone into this strata of oil and the top of the pipe. And now that oil is leaking out as far as 20 miles away. Now, not just five. NOAA said that they had roughly been able to confirm 20-mile-away plumes. This means that this thing is fractured in many spots. Let me go to something much more startling. The black oil in the water in the Gulf of Mexico is not the greatest danger. Are you hearing me? I mean, you've got to understand, we are not being told by our president and by our congressman, and they know this. The black stuff that comes out that you call oil is just destroying wildlife, fish and oysters and shrimp and fishermen's occupations and pristine white beaches and the marshlands and the coral reefs. What comes out with the oil? Most people don't realize this, that there are actually things that come out of the ground with the oil, and what comes out of the ground, out of that gusher with the oil, is causing the death of humans and unborn babies. Folks, please, I have never been so concerned in my life. Most people think only oil comes out. Oil is not the only thing that comes out. I'm going to give them to you right from the EPA. They came out with their report this week. This is the Environmental Protection Agency. They went to the Gulf. They made their test, and they found coming out with the oil are some of the most toxic compounds and gases. They're in the air. They are flammable. They are toxic. And I'm going to name them for you and give you the report right from the Environmental Protection Agency. They are hiding this. I was able to get it. Please write these words down. They announced just this week volatile organic compounds in the air in the Gulf. Did you get those words? This is very important. Volatile organic compounds. They listed some. I'm going to list them for you. This will scare the daylights out of you. In the atmosphere, in the Gulf, number one, hydrogen sulfide. The levels that are allowed, according to the EPA's own statements, the allowable levels of hydrogen sulfide are 5 to 10 parts per billion. I'm saying these very carefully so you get it. PPB, parts per billion. They tested in the last few days in the Gulf, and the winds are carrying this to the shore. It scares the daylights out of me. Florida's getting it. Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana, hydrogen sulfide. Safe levels, 5 to 10 parts per billion. Tested level this past week presently, 1,200 parts per billion. And you wonder why people are getting sick. Let me give you the next one. Benzene, oh please, I'm going to read you the contents and how dangerous benzene is in a moment. Benzene, this is toxic. It causes malignancies. It's known to cause leukemia and cancer. The safe level, according to the Environmental Protection Agency's own records, it is so toxic they only allow 0 to 4 parts per billion. the current level in the Gulf of Mexico going to the shore of all of those states and Florida being carried by the winds is 3,000 parts per billion. Folks, this is so startling. The people down there should at least be warned by this 13-year-old adult we call the President of the United States of America. The people should at least be told by this man what they're breathing, what they're facing, and that 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now, we're going to have deformed babies and people with respiratory problems and people dying. I will give you one more. Well, I must go back to benzene. Wait a minute. I got to read you what the what it says on benzene. Exposure to low levels of benzene can cause dizziness, drowsiness, headache, confusion, tremor, rapid heartbeat, and unconsciousness. Long-term exposure to benzene can cause damage in the bone marrow and lead to blood problems like leukemia. It also weakens the immune system and targets organs such as the kidneys, lungs, and the brain. Folks, this is so dangerous until even I, as a minister, shudder to think about it. I'm going to give you one more. When there
came a killer. Okay, folks, we're coming in the bottom of the hour break. The time's just flying here. We'll probably bring John DiNardo on it. Maybe towards the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll continue with this soundbite. Anyway, you're listening to The Light of Day coming to you live on the Ryan Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back. She ran calling wildfire. She ran calling wildfire. She ran calling wildfire.
Free speech guaranteed. You're listening to The Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to The Light of Day, coming to you live on Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live. This is show number 12. It's Saturday night, June 12th, 2010. By the way, you know that amateur astronomer I was talking about down in Australia, Anthony Wesley? I do plan on trying to get him on my show maybe next weekend, hopefully. I'm just awaiting an email reply from him. He's the astronomer, again, who has spotted this giant fireball seen crashing into Jupiter last July 19th and from 9 days ago, last Thursday night. Anyway, we're going to go back to the soundbite. So here's the rest of the Lindsey Williams, folks.
In the EPA's report, methylene chloride, safe levels of methylene chloride that person can breathe in the air, and this is airborne, in the Gulf. Safe levels, 61 parts per billion. The current levels that were just found a few days ago by the EPA, 3,000 to 3,400 parts per billion. And the American people are not being warned that they're breathing this toxic, flammable stuff, a hurricane. I shudder to think about it. A hurricane could carry this stuff all the way up the east coast of America, and no health care system in the world would ever be able to pay the hospital bills of what people are going to suffer.
Anyway, one more soundbite, and then I got another article by John DiNardo I want to read. This is an interesting thing that talks about what we might be seeing down in the Gulf here soon. Okay, here it is, folks.
This is from the NORTHCOM military website, the official NORTHCOM.mil. This is interesting information here, guys. Are they preparing something for the Gulf? They're actually preparing military operations within the United States as of a week and a half ago, which would be May 16th through the 23rd of 2010. These units make history with Air Force First Homeland Defense, ORI, which stands for Operational Readiness Inspection. Anytime you hear me say ORI, you're thinking of Operational Readiness Inspection. Basically, what they have done is they've gotten military forces and also National Guard to work together with Department of Homeland Security and state and local law enforcement to go through wartime scenarios on the homeland in the United States. This is the first time this has ever been done. Listen to this. You have to. I'm going to put this article so you guys can read it over again later, but I'll read you the highlights here. For the very first time, the U.S. Air Force has validated a unit's wartime capability to defend the homeland by fighting an enemy right here on U.S. soil, said Colonel Greg Nelson, the commander of the Kentucky Air National Guard's 123rd Airlift Wing, which served as the lead organization for the ORI. That represents a major shift in the way the Air Force unit readiness leaders evaluate unit readiness, because it puts the focus in our own backyard rather than in a simulated overseas location where these evaluations are usually staged, he said. The inspection was a total force effort, with the 123rd Airlift Wing representing the Air National Guard, the 317th Airlift Group from Dias Air Force Base, Texas, providing active duty forces, and the 70th Aerial Port Squadron from Homestead Air Reserve Base, Florida, contributing Air Force Reserve members and equipment. As with traditional ORIs, this one tested the ability of each unit to mobilize airmen and equipment, fly to a remote site, operate in hostile environment, defend against enemy attacks, and redeploy back home, all while AMC inspectors evaluated every phase of the operation. Unlike traditional ORIs, in this one, the participants were tasked with supporting civilian authorities while fighting an unconventional foe in the United States. In the past, ORIs have typically required units to deploy to simulated overseas bases and defend against conventional military forces. So they're expecting some kind of a military force within the United States that's going to pose a threat to our own military. Listen as it goes on and as it talks about the Gulf. This really alerted me right here. I am pleased to say that all three units passed this test with flying colors. We are ready to perform our mission on the theater airlift anytime, anywhere, whether it be in support of our allies abroad or here at home in the defense of the United States. The ORI scenario that played out in Mississippi required more than 300 Kentucky Air Guard members to establish operations in concert with about 175 airmen from the Texas and Florida units, forming the, I think they meant National 104th Air Expeditionary Wing. All three organizations work seamlessly to launch theater airlift and medical evacuation sorties across the Gulf Coast region, supporting U.S. Northern Command missions and civil authorities while foiling multiple attacks by well-organized terrorists. The inspection posed an unusually challenging environment because of extreme weather conditions and several 11th-hour changes caused by the non-availability of infrastructure. So they had these tests where all of a sudden there's no infrastructure. Extreme weather conditions. Obviously, that could also mean something to do with this terrible thing that's happening in the Gulf off the coast with the oil. We didn't flinch. This is what they said. We didn't whine. We didn't push back to any challenge from challenges and taskings. to changes in location, to changes in facilities at the last minute, he said, with temperatures hovering around 100 degrees. It also was the hottest ORI the team chief had ever seen. But we maintained a great attitude. We operated safely. We performed our mission with a level of excellence that makes me proud. Even more significant, this inspection marked the first time that any Air Force unit had been wartime validated in support of the security and defense of the United States of America. That's huge, Nelson said. The colonel of the 317th Air Wing also.
Well, that goes on for a few more minutes, folks, but if you want, I'll send you the link to that. I see we had a caller trying to call in here while I was playing the soundbite. Caller, if you will, you're welcome to call back. I just wanted to get that soundbite in, though. Here we have more evidence of evacuations that may be ensuing along the Gulf Coast area. I did have an article I was also wanted to read here, a separate one by John DiNardo. There's also another guy out there named Wade Mattson. He's been reporting. I have an acronym here. Wade Mattson report has learned that Florida Governor Charlie Crist is preparing to declare a major state of emergency in Florida with evacuation of coastal residents, especially those prone to the deadly benzene fumes. But keep in mind, folks, that the deadly benzene fumes are currently being recorded at 3,000 parts per billion. The allowable safe limit is only 0 to 2 parts per billion. So it's a very toxic atmosphere around the Gulf right now, folks. Okay, I'm going to read this article by John DiNardo. This was sent to me yesterday. This is sort of like the other one I read, but still very interesting. It's entitled Gulf of Mexico Tsunami Likely. At least 3 years ago, Mark, a U.S. Army veteran of the Persian Gulf War, told John that his friend, a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, told him that they, meaning the government industrial complex, are planning to drill for oil in the Gulf because they detect signs that land masses will be thrusting up from the seabed. Now, folks, this is what me and John DiNardo have been mentioning quite a bit privately off air, is that as Planet X gets deeper into our inner solar system, we're going to start seeing land masses rise. Back to the article. At the time, I did not associate the concept of oil drilling opportunities with the concept of the seabed thrusting up to form new land masses. Now it is becoming obvious that the upward pressure that was detected below the seabed would make oil drilling quite profitable, since the pressurized oil would easily and abundantly surge up to be collected at minimal cost to the oil companies. We now see confirmation of this theory, that the seabed is pregnant with oil, in the fact that many nations have clamored to drill in the Gulf to reap the oil bonanza. However, these foreign oil companies are now scurrying away from the Gulf, seemingly in panic. What I think, folks, John DiNardo also tends to think this is sort of gotten out of their control. They were hoping to take advantage of this undersea oil volcano by tapping into it, but now they're getting a lot more oil than what they bargained for. Back to the article, what would cause the Gulf of Mexico seabed to thrust upward now? Coincidentally, what would cause the coral seabed on the other side of the world to thrust upward at a rate of 13 feet per day now? If you folks recall, I read that on my show a few weeks ago. I think it was on that first episode I did with Gilbert Erickson. For over 200 years, and especially during the past three decades, astronomers and national governments around the world have been aware of a colossal celestial body, which they have unanimously determined to be a brown dwarf star cruising toward and now into our solar system. This mystery body is being drawn in by the ever-increasing gravitational force of attraction between its own great mass and the even greater mass of our own sun. Its focus or target is the sun. Scientists and researchers have long remained silent, fearing that what happened to Dr. Robert S. Harrington, chief astronomer of the U.S. Naval Observatory, would likewise happen to them if they were to speak out about this intruding brown dwarf star. Dr. Harrington died suddenly in January of 1993, just as he was expected to announce to the world his conclusion that his intensive calculations had been verified by his mid-1992 telescopic observations of the southern skies below the South Pole. Dr. Harrington had dispatched an appropriate telescope to the Black Birch Observatory in New Zealand and had apparently studied the photographic plates upon their subsequent delivery to his laboratory in Washington, D.C. All the Planet X researchers today either believe... Oh, boy, some of that got cut off at the bottom of the page. That's pretty unfortunate. Anyway, it goes on. This celestial object was estimated by Dr. John Murray of Open University in England and by Dr. John Matisse, University of Louisiana, as being, in all probability, about three times more massive than Jupiter. Jupiter is 318 Earth masses. So this intruding brown dwarf star, gravitationally plucking at the surface of Earth while magnetically energizing the Earth's molten iron core, is likely equal in mass to at least 1,000 Earths. And because of its inexplicably great mass and the resultant tremendous gravitational pull, it naturally sucks comets and even small planets into its irresistible gravitational grip as it cruises in from its long journey through deep space. Consequently, U.S. government astronomers at the Project Wormwood facility in Australia have detected and have identified this brown dwarf star as a mini-sun commanding its own mini-solar system, and these scientists are saying that, quote, a mini-solar system is now moving into our solar system. And I have played that soundbite, that's a soundbite that was actually produced by originated from Professor Jim McCanny's show At the Crossroads. He did a report on that 6 years ago, folks. Well, I see we don't have a caller back yet, the one that was trying to call in, whoever it was. By the way, folks, I was fortunate enough to find the movie Knowing on DVD at Target here, I believe 2 days ago, and I finally watched it. There's been so many people recommending I watch that movie, and it's really something because they show this Gulf oil rig exploding out in the Gulf of Mexico on this movie. And keep in mind, this movie was made, it was released a year ago. And then later on in the movie, the climax of the movie is the solar storms that penetrate the Earth and destroy the cities. Now, is that what's really going to happen, folks? I mean, they're already leaking other things out in the motion picture industry to us. You got to wonder. Well, it looks like we'll end up bringing John DiNardo on after the top of the hour break. I do have another email I wanted to find here quick. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill to protect the U.S. power grid. I think that's because they're becoming concerned that these solar storms are going to really create some devastating things on the power grid. I haven't really done much research into that yet, but that's just another dot connector. And there were freak tornadoes that hit across England. I don't know if you folks heard about that. Huge coronal hole in the sun. John DiNardo sent me this. The solar wind to reach us on June 16th, so we could see some pretty dramatic weather events here by June 16th. John thinks it's going to get here before the 16th, though. Anyway, you're listening to Light of Day, coming to you live on Orion. It's Saturday night, June 12th, 2010, and this is show number 12. I'm never prepared enough to do my shows, folks, but I am looking for this article that I really want to read here. It has to do with this forum that was held in Washington, D.C. We really need to cover this because this is right up the alley of this show. There's a new comet visible in the early morning sky. I don't know if that has anything to do with Planet X or not, but I also sent that out to my email list. Here it is. Found it. I really want to read this. As the sun awakens, NASA keeps a wary eye on space weather. Opening up the link as I speak. Coming in the break here in about 7 minutes. This is off science.nasa.gov. As the sun awakens, NASA keeps a wary eye on space weather. June 4th, 2010, Earth and space are about to come into contact in a way that's new to human history. To make preparations, authorities in Washington, D.C. are holding a meeting, the Space Weather Enterprise Forum, at the National Press Club on June 8th, which would have been Tuesday of this week, folks. Richard Fisher, head of NASA's Heliophysics Division, explains what it's all about. Quote, The sun is waking up from a deep slumber, and in the next few years, we expect to see much higher levels of solar activity. At the same time, our technological society has developed an unprecedented sensitivity to solar storms. The intersection of these two issues is what we're getting together to discuss. The National Academy of Sciences framed the problem 2 years ago in a landmark report entitled Severe Space Weather Events, Societal and Economic Impacts. It noted how people of the 21st century rely on high-tech systems for the basics of daily life. Smart power grids, GPS navigation, air travel, financial services, and emergency radio communications can all be knocked out by intense solar activity. A century-class solar storm, the Academy warned, could cause 20 times more economic damage than Hurricane Katrina did, folks. Just checking here to make sure we didn't have somebody call back. Much of the damage can be mitigated if managers know a storm is coming. Putting satellites in safe mode and disconnecting transformers can protect these assets from damaging electrical surges. Preventative action, however, requires accurate forecasting, a job that has been assigned to NOAA. Quote, space weather forecasting is still in its infancy, but we're making rapid progress, says Thomas Bogdan, director of NASA's Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder, Colorado. Bogdan sees the collaboration between NASA and NOAA as key. Quote, NASA's fleet of heliophysics research spacecraft provides us with up-to-the-minute information about what's happening on the sun. They are an important complement to our own GOES and POES satellites, whatever that stands for, which focus more on the near-Earth environment. Among dozens of NASA spacecraft, he notes three of special significance, the STEREO, the Solar Dynamics Observatory, and ACE. ACE stands for Advanced Composition Explorer spacecraft, which was launched back in 97. That one, by the way, ACE, is the best early warning system we have. It allows us to notify utility and satellite operators when a storm is about to hit. Now, folks, this year marks the fourth year in a row that policymakers, researchers, legislators, and reporters have gathered in Washington, D.C. to share ideas about space weather. This year, forum organizers plan to sharpen the focus on critical infrastructure protection. The ultimate goal is to improve the nation's ability to prepare, mitigate, and respond to potentially devastating space weather events. Folks, I believe we're on the threshold of a new era in which space weather can be as influential in our daily lives as ordinary terrestrial weather. We take this very seriously indeed, says Mr. Fisher. And, oh, who is Mr. Fisher here? Mr. Fisher. Well, anyway, whoever that is, that's who said that. Richard Fisher, head of NASA's Heliophysics Division. Back to what I was talking about on the Gulf Coast evacuation. If things get bad enough, folks, 50 to 200 miles inland will become devoid of life. And I believe I've seen that on Jeff Renz's website. I just wanted to throw that in for what it's worth. And if these tsunamis happen, they can be anywhere from 20 to 80 feet tall. I don't remember if I mentioned this before, but I'm trying to get Anthony Wesley onto my show, possibly next Saturday night. That's the amateur astronomer down in Australia that seen this fireball hit Jupiter 9 days ago. We're going to be going to break here in about maybe 2 minutes from now. I'm going to be calling John DiNardo during the top of the hour break. Hopefully he's still waiting for me. I supposed to call him here about 20 or 25 minutes ago. A lot of stuff going on, folks. There's so much more I'd like to cover, but only have so much time. Anyway, here comes the bumper music. You're listening to The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, live on Orion Talk Radio Network. And we'll be back after the top of the hour break. Stay tuned.
Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. We have more listeners than the big boys' HD2 channels. This is Mike.